From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT Shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. It's a conversation we have to have. It's a conversation about the state of the nation. Talk to us now. From the U.S. and Canada, call 1-888-201-6425. From the U.K., call 033-0024-1026. And from Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
All right, welcome to State of the Nation. How's everybody doing out there today? Boy, we got a great show lined up for you. Very excited to be on the mic here on today's News Talk, tntradio.live. Find us on the internet there. Find the store. Find the donate link. All the good stuff. The episodes links. Oh, my gosh. You could just spend every day in there making sure you're caught up on the 24/7 awesomeness over here at today's News Talk. All right, I am joined by John Matlin today. John, welcome to the show.
Oh boy, what a day. It's Groundhog Day, everybody. Groundhog's Day. So today, Bill de Blasio didn't kill anybody or any groundhogs like he did in Staten Island once upon a time. He went there and literally killed our groundhog. It was a very sad day. And it's also the day that AOC spoke on the floor of the House saying removing Ilhan Omar from the Foreign Affairs Committee over Israeli remarks is racism and incitement of violence against women of color. It's a day, man. We have a lot going on in our crazy world, isn't it? As always.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I saw one of the squad members literally have a freak out and break down in tears over Omar getting removed from one of the councils today.
And the best part is the tweets that are going around are today, some people did something. So it's just right for the course, as that was Ilhan Omar's comment about 9/11. So it's just everyone's just throwing it back at her. It's like, oh, well, you're off the committee.
Yeah. All right. I'm also joined by Cece Woods from thecurrentreport.com. Cece, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Hey, hey. You know, holding the fort down here in California. Just everything starts to or continues to implode around me. And we're going to discuss that today. There's a couple of juicy, juicy things that are going to come out in today's broadcast. And we are going to be joined by the famous Mike Netter, who is the force behind the original Newsom recall, which is the second largest volunteer effort, second only to Brexit. And he did that on a shoestring budget. He's a rock star. So we're going to have him weighing on the LAX outage, the power outage, yet more trouble with the airline industry, more trouble with LAX, more trouble just in California in general. And we'll continue the juicy juice tomorrow, too.
Oh, yeah. There's so much.
California in general. And we'll continue the juicy juice tomorrow, too.
Oh, yeah. There's so much going on. They just announced, I watched this morning, Gavin Newsom talking about Senate Bill 2, SB 2. So, you know, we've been talking about how everybody recently got their right to conceal carry back in California. Well, it's gone. It's going to be gone already pretty soon here. As soon as SB 2 passes, and it will, he says it will. Okay, but that's a whole nother story. So there is a surge in child fentanyl poisonings. And some are saying this is just the beginning of the fentanyl crisis. Now, you guys might remember back in around Halloween, there were a lot of stories going around about, you know, Skittle-colored fentanyl being placed in candy wrappers and brought into the country. And the liberal left-stream media, mass media cartel, they went around saying that this was a conspiracy theory. Well, I think not. There's a nonprofit called Families Against Fentanyl. And it says between 2019 and 2021, fentanyl deaths among 1 to 4 year olds tripled. So the study shows that children are dying from fentanyl poisoning faster than any other age group. Many of these deaths are children of drug users who are accidentally exposing their kids. That's what this is all about. So you've got drug user parents who leave this stuff laying around. And, you know, negligent, yes. Terrible, yes. Bad parenting, yes. But in the old days, if you left a Ambien laying around, it probably wasn't going to immediately kill your 1 to 4 year old if they just simply touched it. But now that we have all this, you know, fake cartel-manufactured, bathtub-manufactured drugs entering the country. That is no longer the case. So I could go on about this, but I don't. Nothing more needs to be said.
It's awful, and it's not just because it's candy-colored. Kids can get into anything, and all you need is residue from fentanyl. And being an adult, a police officer recently was, they think the wind took some of the residue out of the car, and she was out cold. They had to, the other officers had to, you know, revive her. They had to do all those steps of bringing her back to life, and that was just at a traffic stop. So you can imagine a kid crawling on the floor of somebody that has illicit drugs all over the home. It doesn't need to look like Cinnamon Toast Crunch or Fruity Pebbles like they do with marijuana these days. The kids just have to crawl over it, and that could be the end of it.
Scary. It's so scary, Cece. It says here, it's become so prevalent, it's killing babies and children just by incidental contact. That's by FAF founder Jim Raw, who's echoing exactly what Johnny just said right there.
As a parent, I'm absolutely just, I'm so saddened, deeply saddened by this. I'm grateful I don't have kids in high school, grateful I don't have babies or surround myself with people who are involved with this type of drug use. How do we get a handle on it? I have no idea. We're going to have the chief back on just to have an updated talk about this, because it's out of control, and it's just, I've seen cops that actually have pulled over traffic, people over in traffic stops, and actually had to have CPR because they were exposed to it. So
I saw one of those yesterday.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Weekly.
So I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is probably even more than weekly, probably multi times
daily,
during the week,
yeah,
throughout the country.
Seriously.
Yeah, daily. So I you know, how do we get a handle on this is what I want to know. So how do we get control of this catastrophic drug problem? How?
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Everyone wants to know. It may
solutions.
Be too late.
We need solutions, yeah. People. Solutions.
Close the frickin' border and kick out MS-13. That's one place.
There you go. Now that's a good place to start, because that's probably the number one place it comes from.
Big solutions. Big solutions. All right. Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio? You think we're doing a good job? Please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or a comment on Facebook, Gab, or Gitter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
News reported fairly.
They are a reliable source.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right. So it looks like we've got another drone topic coming up here related to the Ukraine. So what's going on here? Well, it's going to be an interesting one, folks. So here you go. A U.S.-based weapons manufacturer has just offered to supply Ukraine with advanced death-dealing drones that come with a very low price point, $1 to be exact. But there's a catch, of course. Here with the story, joining us now is TNT Radio News producer Adam Clark. Ruckus, welcome to the show.
Hello, 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 everybody. I hope you're doing well. So while many of the recent headlines around supplying weapons to Ukraine have been focused on tanks and just recently F-16 fighter jets, there's one person who contends that long-range, high-endurance drones, which can supply intelligence and surveillance, would have an immediate impact on the battlefield. That person would be Lyndon Blue. That person would be the chief executive for General Atomics Aeronautical. That is a San Diego-based company that makes MQ-9 Reaper drones. Yes, you're quite familiar with those. Those are the ones that are operated by the U.S. Air Force. Which has been trying to move on from the drone in recent years in order to focus on next generation unmanned aircraft. However, Congress has blocked those efforts. The Reaper and sister General Atomics drones tailored to the U.S. Army have been used extensively in conflicts across the world for more than two decades. They can stay airborne for hours and are capable of carrying not only surveillance payloads, but also weapons systems. Drones are being used by Ukrainian military forces now, but this company here contends that its drones would be useful in the conflict. And yes, indeed, in a public statement released just yesterday, this dude, I think it's a dude, Blue, confirmed that the company recently proposed transferring some of their company-owned Reapers plus the ground control station to operate them in order to help Ukraine in its war with Russia. Well, how much would you find people pay for such a drone? Well, probably a lot of money. But in this case, they want to charge Ukraine just $1. But as you indicated, there is a catch. The proposal would actually require Ukraine to spend $10 million just to prepare and ship the drones from the United States. While this is the interesting part to me, maintenance costs would run to about $8 million annually, every year. This is according to the news, which was broken on Tuesday by the Wall Street Journal. So I hope people out there understand this concept of service as a subscription model that's been quite popular lately. Apparently now we've moved on to World War III as a subscription service model. This is absolutely insane. Keep in mind the U.S. has, of course, armed Ukraine with over 700 Switchblade and 1,800 Phoenix Ghost kamikaze drones, which are capable of dive bombing targets, as well as a handful of reconnaissance UAVs. But Washington has continued to insist its assistance has been mostly defensive in nature. However, we're talking about Reaper drones. They have 66-foot wingspans, an endurance of at least 12 hours when fully loaded. They have formidable offensive capabilities and are far more difficult to pass off as solely defensive weapons. But again, it just strikes me interesting that this seems to be a subscription service model. What do you guys think?
Everything, Ruckus, in the entire world from vaccination to World War III is in a subscription model. That way, for $1 down, you can give back some of the money that we gave you to our Defense Department and all of the military industrial complex. It never ends, and it's sickening, and it is just going to keep escalating. But my question is, who is ready to go to war for all of the people out there that are supporting it? Because the time is nearing for you to actually put your boots on the ground, and I'm sure you're going to turn and run.
Yeah.
I support everything that Johnny just said. Excuse me. I support everything that Johnny just said, and I really don't have much to add because he just summed it up really good for me, other than I am jealous of Ruckus's TNT coffee cup. So.
Oh yeah, his throw pillow too. It's amazing.
I am. But Johnny summed it up. He did. And you know what? If you supported this war, and you know what, you better be ready because, you know what, we're next. That's just the way it looks.
Yeah. And okay, the MQ-9 Reaper is primarily an offensive strike unmanned aerial vehicle for the U.S. Air Force. It has significant loiter time, as Ruckus has pointed out. The sensors are very wide-ranging. The multi-mode communication suite, precision weapons. This thing is more than just reconnaissance and surveillance. Yes, it can do reconnaissance and surveillance, but they use it currently against high-value, fleeting, and time-sensitive targets. It does close air support. It does combat search and rescue, precision strike, buddy laser, convoy and raid overwatch, route clearance, target development, and terminal air guidance. So a fully operational Reaper system consists of several sensor and weapon-equipped aircraft, ground control stations. There's a Predator primary satellite link and spare equipment along with operations and maintenance crews simply deployed for a 24-hour mission. Now, this basic crew consists of a rated pilot to control the aircraft and command the mission, an enlisted crew member to operate sensors and weapons, as well as a mission coordinator when required. So these things can shoot guided bombs, Unit 12 Paveway 2s. It's also equipped with synthetic aperture radars. I mean, this thing, it can fire a GBU 38 JDAMs, Joint Direct Attack Munitions, air-to-ground missiles, Hellfires. So, you know, and it takes a C-130 to move one of these things. So fully disassembled, it'll fit into a single container for deployment, and it can be moved in a C-130 Hercules. So to say they're selling it for a dollar and to say that this isn't something you know, that we won't have to supply training and support and maintenance and all that for is a total misdirection. And this is a nudge toward a larger conflict, like we discussed yesterday. Yes. With the Jets. Once you have these things in the sky, no fly yes. zones are established. Once that happens, you're at war.
There's so much. I mean, this fire is about to have more and more gasoline poured on it. So we're on the precipice every, I feel like it's like every day we say that we're on the precipice, but as we keep igniting more flames around this puddle of gasoline that we are surrounding, we are really getting close to that. And the fact that we're giving, you know, where there, the price is like $1 and then subscription fee is ridiculous, but it's also as we continue to give more and more arms and tanks, the thing is they never actually pay. And we pay them and then give them the tank. So it's very strange what the money is going to that we're laundering out at this
and
point.
And what about tiptoeing our personnel into it, right?
Oh,
they can't do this by themselves. That means that we have to be involved in this. That's the whole point.
As they sell with any good packaging and marketing and branding when you're pushing a product. But wait, there's more. This company is also going to go ahead and train the first group of remote pilots and the maintenance personnel for no charge, absolutely free. All you have to do is just convince the United States government to say yes, because that's the only condition. That's the catch, according to them, because they say there are no strings attached. All that is required is approval from the U.S. government. So there you have it, folks. Obviously the motive here is this company is standing to lose a crap ton of money because the Air Force is done with them. So they're just being opportunistic, in my opinion. Yeah. And I think it's a bit of a nothing burger. And I was looking more into this. I think they're not charging $1 per drone, but it's $1 for the two of them together. Those are 50-cent drones, people. Buy one, get one free. There you go.
There you go. Yes. Software as a service. Never mind. How about Predator drones as a service? And to say that, as long as the government says we can train these guys, that's really stupid, because these things run on U.S. secret satellites. They run on Harris radios that use encryption. I mean, we're talking top secret level clearances needed to operate these things and to train other people to operate these things. So are we giving clearances to operators in Ukraine? Someone riddle me that. Is a Ukro-Nazi going to be flying a Predator drone around and we're all supposed to be okay with that? I'll leave it at that, because we got to get going here. Thank you, Ruckus. Thank you very much. So TNT Radio wants to know what you really think. It's time to get on our soapbox and tell us. Find it over there at tntradio.live. You can upload video, audio, drop a note on that soapbox. So help us light that fuse for freedom with today's news talk, TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Lynn Shaw.
So I'm going to go down to Washington, and we've got these six bills, and we were very, very confident before Congress, you know, broke up for the Christmas holiday, that we had one bill in particular, KOSA, K-O-S-A, Kids Online Safety Act. And we thought for sure this bill was going to be, just needed one more push. And you know what? It just wasn't brought to vote. Things in Congress where they go, child safety issues, where they go to disappear. But I'm going to go down there next week, be part of the Congressional Roundtable. We are going to, again, you know, empower ourselves and others. We're going to get these bills back on the floor. We're going to talk to our Congress. We are going to talk to congressional aides, legislators, anybody we can. We have to get these issues on the floor. You know, you've got to contact your elected representatives. After all, you pay taxes, and we're paying a lot of taxes in the United States, and we'll be paying more taxes under the current administration. You have a right to know who represents you, because most people I ask, they'll say, I don't even know.
Lynn Shaw on TNT Radio.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification. 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are opportunity zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702 or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
TNT Radio wants to hear from you. Call Brian, John, and CeCe now. From the U.S. and Canada, call 1-888-201-6425. From the U.K., call 033-0024-1026. And from Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to State of the Nation on TNT Radio. I'm Hesher. I'm joined by CeCe Woods and John Matlin here for State of the Nation today. And we have a special guest joining us right now to discuss a little bit further something we brought up yesterday. Yesterday, we noted that Biden's Justice Department has changed presidential pardons for the worse. That's the headline there if you folks want to go out there and get caught up on it if you missed yesterday's show. But you didn't miss yesterday's show because you love State of the Nation, right? Well, if you did, definitely go check that out. So what's going on here? And there's also older articles, too, about gaps in Trump's pardons and how the Biden administration can still pursue justice. We've seen that happen to people like Roger Stone and others in the wake of all the bogus investigations that happened during the Trump years. So joining us now is Tyler Nixon. He worked as Roger Stone's lawyer. He's a friend of Roger, and he's a friend of State of the Nation. He's an activist. He's an amazing speaker, and his name is Tyler Nixon once again. Tyler, welcome to State of the Nation. How are you today?
Hesher, it's good to be with you and enjoying the new format, and congratulations.
Great, hey, thanks, man. I'll quickly introduce you to John Matlin here. He's our utility player. John, say hello to Tyler.
What's up, Tyler? How are you, man?
Hey, John. Good to meet you. Running for Congress, right, huh?
Yeah. No, that's actually my past life. I just haven't changed my Zoom. So,
oh, it should so say you're like me. A recovering politician.
There you go. And I will never identify as a politician, so I'm recovering from my loss.
Yes.
He now identifies as a prime utility player and journalist.
Excellent.
And we've got CeCe with us, too. Of course, you know CeCe.
Yes. The great CeCe.
Yes. We're taking this off text and now bringing it on to TNT.
Amen.
Just continuing the conversation.
Sure.
Yes. Okay, so CeCe, where shall we begin? Do you want to talk a little bit about any of this before we jump in, or shall I just pitch it straight to Tyler?
No, I want Tyler to just start, you know, jamming in on the pardons and whatever else he can kind of get us up to speed on, right?
Okay, so Tyler, sure. This character, Philip Esfomez, I don't know if I pronounce his name right, but Trump commuted his sentence with time served before he left, and now the DOJ is going after him. They're trying to recharge him on 6 of the 26 counts that they originally charged him with. What do you make of this?
Well, you know, I'm not as familiar with that specific case. What brought this to my attention was an article sent to me, or an editorial written by the most odious and criminal of prosecutors ever to disgrace the Department of Justice, Andrew Weissman, and his new take on the potential for returning to these persecutions of Trump associates, such as Paul Manafort and Roger, and you know, how they would have to, you know, his typical distorted, demented view of not only the law but the Constitution that would permit this type of not only it's almost double jeopardy, really, if you think about it, but moreover, an attempt to challenge the pardon power of the president, you know, after the fact, or by to end run it, essentially, is what they're trying to do, which is there's nothing, there's no aspect of our Constitution, no sacrosanct or really a traditional and embedded power, even if it's a balance, a check or a balance of power type situation, that they will not, the left in their mania for control, for total control, totalitarian control, frankly, that they will not assault and attempt to tear down and dismantle and otherwise undermine.
Now, so you're a lawyer type of guy. You've been to lawyering schools and learned all the lawyering things. Do they not teach people the Constitution at lawyer school? I mean, what is with these like apex people like this who appear to run around just, you know, wiping their butts with the Constitution and throwing it in everybody's faces?
May I just jump in here? We have recently watched the law school have people that are going to be lawyers trying to shut down freedom of speech. So what happens is when you stray away with youth and the new wave of people coming in to be lawyers and they don't understand the importance of the Constitution or the way of America and they want to fundamentally change us and destroy our country, well, that's where we get this sweet spot of ridiculousness that we're finding. And yes, these people do not care about the Constitution. I'm sorry, I jumped in. I just had to word vomit all of that out.
Wait, I want to add one more thing. Tyler, hold on 1 second, because I know you need to answer this. You got three of us here bulldozing you. So what we discussed yesterday, too, was, has this ever been done before? Like, no, has any president gone behind another president and said, we're undoing your stuff? Like, I mean, help me out.
Never that I'm aware
Thank
of.
You.
And in fact, it's never been really questioned all that much. Even when President Ford pardoned former President Nixon and some of the Watergate, mainly Nixon, there was never any serious questions raised or challenges made to that power because it's so structurally fundamental to the design of our constitutional republic and the checks and balances that are put in place. This is a check not only on really on of the executive on his own administration, you know, because let's face it, I mean, the prosecutors, their power emanates from the president. So you have, you know, but it recognizes there'll be situations when you have either rogue administrators, such as the Department of Justice, or in this case, well, you know, they're an extension of the president, literally, because Biden has no regard for the Constitution either. But it's also a check on the judicial branch and the results that would come out of, potentially corrupt, as we see in the district court and federal district court in Washington, D.C., and extremely corrupt, in my opinion, to the point where I think that court should be abolished entirely. We should not have it. It should be only in states that are, you know, actual states. It should not be in the federal enclave or the District of Columbia that we have a federal district court, because it's become a partisan. It's just a nest of partisan and persecutorial interests, ulterior interests, and abuse of process and abuse of the system that they can get away with because they know they have a 92% Democrat and really leftist Democrat, not just regular Democrat, you know, not even moderate, if that is such a thing anymore, moderate Democrat in the jury pool in Washington, D.C. I mean, that town has been totally taken over by the radical left in every sense. And so, you know, any Republican, conservative, libertarian, anybody who's not basically a hardcore leftist who dares oppose that system is in the district court in Washington, D.C., looking to be convicted eventually. And it's no question about it. You don't have a chance in hell. And Roger Stone didn't. Neither is anyone else, who's been persecuted, frankly. But here's the thing is, you know, look,
hold on 1 second there, Tyler. Hold that thought. We got to go to a quick headline here. But thank you for breaking that down. That is exactly why Paul Manafort came on my show and said we have a dual system of justice. We'll be right back after a headline.
TNT Radio News.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. Statistics released by the French Interior Ministry have revealed that nearly all serious crimes increased in number last year, including murder, sexual violence, and theft. Senator Tommy Tuberville painted a bleak picture of the state of international affairs, calling this moment in history the most dangerous time in his lifetime. An ice storm has frozen areas from Tennessee to Texas, snapping trees, taking down power lines, and leading to almost 400,000 outages.
Do you have a suggestion for a possible guest you'd like to hear on TNT Radio?
Or perhaps you have a topic you feel we should discuss?
Then we want to hear from you. Simply complete the suggestion form on the TNT Radio website. Help us make a difference on TNT Radio.
Yeah, I can verify that that weather report there. I went outside this morning and my front yard tree froze and snapped in half. It's literally snapped in half. All right, welcome back to State of the Nation, everybody. We're with Tyler Nixon here. And before the headlines there, Tyler was breaking down how that federal court in D.C. actually functions and how that leads to us having a dual system of justice. So, Tyler, please pick up where you left off there. You were in the middle of something before we took the headline.
You know, and it speaks volumes of the fact that the administrative judge or the judicial administrator of that district court on the appeal, who sat on the appeals court in the D.C. Circuit, as you would have it, or the D.C. district court, was Merrick Garland. So, you know, if you recall that he was to be appointed to the Supreme Court and rise. You know, the one thing that Mitch McConnell did good in his life so far, I mean, I have no use for this man, but he kept Garland off the Supreme Court. And when you look at the complete politicization and weaponization of the Department of so-called Justice, I mean, I think we really should think about renaming it, kind of like the so-called Defense Department. Which was originally the War Department, more accurately. But that being said, Garland and others, and they have no. It never ceases to amaze me how these people, on one hand, leftists, can wrap themselves in the Constitution as it suits them, and sort of play this like, oh well, we're just defending this that or the other sense of tradition or precedent. Yet they just, I mean, there's nothing they will not end run or attempt to whittle away, or kneecap, undermine in the Constitution, whether it be actual, again, balance of powers or just fundamental rights. They have no regard for it. They're completely, you know, they talk about the living Constitution, which means basically we don't have actual fixed rights in their minds. You know, they view it as everything emanates from their power and the will that they have. And that's really what, you know, your rights are basically what the government lets you do. And that's, I think, their basic view of things, as opposed to the government exists solely to protect our rights. And we are actually the government in the sense, you know, the people are. And this pardon issue, it's just another example, I mean, of Andrew Weissman, who's written this article proposing to figure out ways to get around the fact that the pardon power has been considered absolute. And there's nothing. It's very, very simple in the Constitution. Donald Trump could write, or Joe Biden, or whoever's in the office, could literally write a pardon out on a napkin, and that would be sufficient. And that is, you know, the power. There's no sort of process necessary around it. And that's why they were beside themselves, because what Donald Trump had done is gotten rid of the Office of Pardons, essentially. Before you could apply, and there was this Byzantine good luck, you know, and all these people would apply for pardons through the office, and they would vet it through, and it would finally get to the president. And then, of course, you'd have the flurry of ulterior, like the Mark Rich pardon in the Clinton era, where, you know, that's when somebody as corrupt as Bill Clinton would pardon all of his cronies and criminal, associates, whatever. But in the case of Donald Trump, I mean, he had had so many people unjustly persecuted under him. But he kept that power within himself, where it was just literally, if you could get to Trump through whoever, that's how you got a pardon. There was no office of the pardon anymore. And of course, this appalled the sort of technocratic administrative types and who love to see some sort of office created and some sort of legal process or, you know, whatever, litigation process or process to go through, gatekeepers, as you would have it. And getting back to the original, I would like to say for the record, please don't call me a lawyer, okay? I am an actor, I'm an attorney, I'm an advocate, I'm a counselor, but, you know, to me, there's Esquire, you know, which is someone who's lettered in the law. There's a counselor who gives you advice. There's an attorney who gives you advice and speaks for you. And then that's also in the European, they call advocat, you know, in most languages, an advocate. To me, a lawyer is just an a-hole who wants to make money from the law, or, you know, basically abuse the system for whatever their purposes are. So I just want to get that off the record.
All right, I retract that, Tyler. I retract that. Just I'll do you that favor. Just don't ever call me a journalist either.
Oh, gosh, no.
Hey, I take offense to that.
You should. So, you should. Hey, they're destroying your trade. They're totally destroying your trade, just like the lawyers.
Yeah, it's just the assaults. Weissman represents this. There's a great book called Three Felonies a Day by Harvey Silverglate, and I believe that Sidney Powell might have been involved in that or in a follow-up. And it lays out how Weissman, in the Enron affair, this is going back 20 years, basically took down Arthur Andersen, a company, cost tens of thousands of people their jobs, locked up innocent people, held them in gulag-style conditions in order just to vindicate his power trip and the sense of the bully idea of the Justice Department, where we should fear any sort of scrutiny from this all-powerful agency, this all-powerful extension of the executive power. And it's just disgraceful because they prosecuted people based on what they cobbled together. Were not even actual statutes that you could, like, in other words, they just sort of used hybridized prosecutions just to however it suited them to go after whoever they wanted to go after. And, unfortunately, I mean, our system is only in this constitutionally or legally is only as good as the people are willing to adhere to the, first of all, the fundamental principles of due process, but also just the notion that we have a scrutable versus inscrutable body of law that people can understand and that you can prosecute or not on, and then have very, very clearly delineated elements to each, in the case of criminal crimes, criminal offenses, versus just like, well, we're just going to sort of pull this all together. And I mean, I have to say, and that's the last thing, and we can go on to a different subject, is that if you read the indictment of Roger Stone that was we found out was, of course, written by Andrew Weissman, because his metadata was left on it when he illegally leaked it with the along with the search warrants to CNN before the raid that was conducted, the violent whatever SWAT raid on Roger Stone to take him down for what are at best white collar crimes. But it is a masterpiece in sophistry, in literally just hiding the ball, like shading certain evidence at certain points, and focusing on something that's contradictory by other. I mean, it's just, these people will, I hate to say it, it's like they get away with it because, people aren't, you have to really understand what's going on to see through it. Otherwise, they just get their headline, they get their abusive process where, oh my God, it's like the Mar-a-Lago raid with Trump, it's all about just basically conditioning the public to think that whoever they're going after is a criminal and deserves this kind of treatment. And so just the mere fact that they focus their attention on you makes you culpable or somehow guilty or corrupt. And that is the most dangerous possible situation you can have, because essentially these, in my view, who are the real criminals, these criminally corrupt officials who sit there, and have this, employ this double standard, this partisan basis for conducting so-called justice, can basically just go after and take down anybody they want. And that was the sort of the three felonies a day, implying that every American who exists, at some point you're going to violate some federal law in any given day, potentially up to three felonies a day. And anybody who's ever filed a tax return probably could be hauled before a federal court for whatever have you. So, this is the problem. This is what they do. They create a massive, and Biden was perfect. Biden was like the progenitor of this, particularly with the drug war, creating more and more and more laws, larding up the federal code to the point where nobody can understand it. No one person can understand it. And they can use it any way they want, at any time they want. And even a dormant law, like, for example, with registering representing foreign agents, with the name of that law escapes me, that they're prosecuting, not the Mann Act, the one that they're bringing prosecutions on. Anybody help me out? The name escapes me.
I know the
me.
One you mean. There's a new one actually right now to do with that, and I think it's something we're probably going to talk about later. I don't have the name to hand though, but I know exactly the one you mean, because they're saying now that members of the squad and others were getting buying advertisements from a Chinese-owned company, so that's fallen into that same realm, I think.
Yeah, it was never used until suddenly they decided they want to start using it, which is, there are so many laws that are just sort of dormant that aren't really enforced because they're ridiculous. And this is the thing, though, they have in their whole panoply, their suite of potential weapons, and when you weaponize for partisan purposes, the prosecutorial process and the justice system. I mean, God help us all, because I mean, who knows, the federal, like I said, the Internal Revenue Code alone is so complex. I remember in law school, and this was 22-23 years ago, they had a Chinese professor, Yin, I believe his name was, who taught the advanced federal tax, and people would come out of that class literally crying because it was so arcane. They could not get it. They just couldn't understand. It was baffling. I mean, it was a baffling ordeal to become that, to try to tackle that and understand it and make sense of it. So, you know, this is how totalitarianism and tyranny rises in a technocratic world.
I think Calculus 2 Fourier series was the only class that ever brought me to tears. So, I mean, if a Fourier series,
you and me both,
do it,
brother.
Oh man, those are nasty. But you shouldn't have that coming out of a you know, Internal Revenue Service law session. That's absolutely amazing. All right,
these are attorneys. These are smart people. You know, well, supposedly
yeah,
they're law
yeah,
students,
high achievers.
Yeah, so they absolutely should be able to grapple with it and understand it. But no, it would break them down. So, yeah.
Well, there you go. That says a lot. That says a lot. All right. Well, I'm going to hand it over to the team here, see if they got any final questions for you. We do have to let you go quickly here, though. So I want to thank you on my behalf and on behalf of the rest of the team here at TNT and State of the Nation, Tyler. Johnny, you got any other questions for him?
No, I'm good. That was excellent.
All right.
It was very thorough. Thank you so much, Tyler. And we're going to have you back soon for sure. We've got,
yeah, we'll have you back on again soon. There's so much more to discuss. This isn't going to be an ongoing thing here.
I appreciate that. It's always great to be with you guys. Have a great, great day and the rest of the week.
All right. You too, man. You too. There goes Tyler Nixon, everybody. All right. You're listening to State of the Nation on today's News Talk, and we'll be right back.
Private jet flying John Kerry, the climate envoy for the United States, gets confronted in Davos about his private jet misadventures.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Kudos to the Rebel News for running down the big celebrities in Davos. One of them was Secretary John Kerry. Here's what he had to say about his private jet ways.
How can you justify being here when you yourself take private jets? Can you answer that? But you've taken a private jet before. No, but you've taken a private jet before to collect a climate change award. You have done that.
So climate envoy John Kerry now claims to fly commercially exclusively? I think this is the equivalent of asking a 4-pack-a-day cigarette smoker, hey, how many packs do you smoke? And their answer is, I quit completely. And it sounds plausible until you realize they quit yesterday. The question is John Kerry going to continue flying private jets? One set of rules for thee, another set for them. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
Since the day I stopped drinking, my life has gotten better and better. I can't take any credit for it. It just seems that without alcohol, I think better, I'm more careful with money, I watch what I say, I don't get into trouble like I did when I was drinking. It's scary trying to walk through life alone, and today I have that very distinct feeling that I don't ever have to be alone again.
Visit AA.org for more information and download the Meeting Guide app to find a meeting near you.
Conversations about what matters the most. This is State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to State of the Nation. Thanks, Tyler, for joining us in that previous segment there. Okay, so we're going to bump into the next one here. We've got another special guest joining us here. We've got Mike Netter about to join us, and he is the man behind the Gavin the Nuisance, gruesome nuisance recall, which by all estimates should have happened. That guy is an illegitimate governor, and today or yesterday, just this week, he has released his new Gun Control Act, SB2, I believe it's called, which is the follow-up to SB 189, I think, was the original one they tried to ram through last year after New York Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin ruled in the Supreme Court that states cannot behave the way that California and New York want to behave. But what do California and New York do? They go right back to behaving that way and trying to fight the Supreme Court and the Constitution. So that's not necessarily what we're going to talk about today, but I had to mention that because Mike Netter is here, and sit back, crack one open, folks. Mike is about to set his hair on fire and tell us what he thinks. So, Cece, what are we going to talk about with Mike today?
Well, we're going to talk. Mike is he's all things politics, of course. He knows anything and everything there is to know about California politics. And but he also knows a bit about power grids. And so we are and rebuilding California, which is in shambles, as we know. And so yesterday, as literally within minutes of us getting off the air, the power went out right here, right next to where I live at LAX. More chaos for the aviation industry, basically. Okay. So I would like Mike to be able to maybe kind of walk us through this. I've done a little bit of research, but it hasn't yielded anything. So I was hoping that Mike could give us a little insight. Mike?
Well, first off, thank goodness I'm here. The Republican side has no money, because if I'd been flying Southwest through LAX, I would have missed this interview. But we take Greyhound, and thank goodness they're still powered by gasoline. So that's why I'm here today. But let's explore what happened yesterday. And by the way, this isn't new. And thank goodness to TNT that you're paying attention for it. So we've talked before, Brian, on your show and many other factions about the dangers of the power grid. This show and everything else we do in life takes place because of electricity. Well, let's walk through. I want to do a little bit of a history lesson here for you and your listeners here today, because this is not a new phenomenon. It gets attention yesterday because it happened to be probably some people from the news got one of the 12 that got caught in the elevators, etc. First off, a little bit of background on LAX and power, and where I have more questions than answers today. The power around LAX, which is supplied by DWP, a lot of puns intended, but that stands for the Department of Water and Power, because of course they go together. Just seems strange LA structure that way, but let's roll with it. The cables going in, for some reason, quit working in simplistic terms, and we're not sure why. Okay, and that alone is a little bit scary, that one of the world's largest airports, the power around it went down. What's also more interesting, where the public has a bit of short memories, is power in an airport, which went down for an hour, isn't supposed to happen. Let's be really clear. I want to say that again. It's not supposed to happen. Airport systems, especially for one of the largest in the world, we're not talking Nebraska, with all due deference to Nebraska here in the middle of nowhere, is supposed to have backup power systems that flip on so power can't go out for an hour. Now, what's fascinating, just last year, in I believe it was November of 2021, the backup power system went a little bonkers in Terminal 6 and the power went down. About 2 years before that, it was June 6th or June 7th in 2019, the backup system for LAX, and I want to separate these for us a little bit here, the backup system for LAX went a little bit bonkers, and employees had to run around by hand turning switches on. So the backup system went down at LAX, causing the main system to go down because the DWP went in. And yes, you can look that up. Okay. That was 2019. What's a little bit more fascinating, why it's an inconvenience, it could be deadly to people, get stuck in elevators. My God, the coffee stand isn't open, which I know is a horrible thing for those addicted to caffeine in LAX. What's more scary, what I heard yesterday, was the fact that the TSA, the real ID checks, went down. Now, let me explain something in a little bit simplistic form. Going way back in time, and yes, you're hearing correctly, in 1918, the federal government said airports should really have a backup system for everything. Looks like Orville and Wilbur have it nailed, and this is going to become a really big thing. In 1998, okay, the Federal Aviation, FAA, actually gave a memo which was revised in, I believe, 2003 to add kind of wind and solar power, that said this, that systems which are under the auspice of the federal government must have a UPS system working at all times to provide 4 hours of power. And if that system goes down, you must flip to commercial power. Which is why yesterday the towers at LAX didn't go down. Because that's a bit weird if you're coming in on a plane and they go, hey, where did that guy go? What happened, right? So it's one thing to get stuck in an elevator. It's another thing if the reality is we don't know where the planes are. Good news that apparently worked. But here's the $64 billion question, keeping with the dollars of the day. TSA, if you remember correctly, about 5 years ago, was taken back under the federal government. Remember, it used to be run by the airlines. Gate 6 was Southwest. Now all TSA employees and the screenings that you go through, checking your ID, making sure you're not Brian, carrying your weapons through security. Not that I'm against it, Brian. It's just against the rules. Okay, there you go. Are to, you know, to protect us, right? Well, those TSA systems checking ID went down yesterday. If they went down, what that tells me is that LAX, one of the biggest airports in the world, didn't have their federal TSA system hooked up per their own memo, revised in 2003. This isn't new, to an uninterrupted power source. So whatever the mysterious reason is that the power went down to DWP, we may not know. It's, of course, indicative. This isn't the first time it's happening, is my point. And if a schmuck like me knows about that weakness in the system, other people do, too. Back to you, Cece.
thank God for Zoom so we could see each other. Anyway, tell me.
Well, it depends. You don't know what I look
why
like.
Why isn't Newsom addressing this? Mr. wants us to all be on electric vehicles. Why isn't he addressing this? Why isn't he talking
about
this?
Well, that's an interesting issue. First off, the deeper portion of the issue. So there's a Fed issue that Newsom should be addressing. I mean, that the Fed should be addressing that has to do with the infrastructure. But in California, I can tell you three letters why Newsom isn't addressing it. PG&E, okay? The power grid is under duress, and there are 3,000 power companies that take care of three grids. We know, I've talked about this ad nauseum on the air and in the movie, Grid Down, Power Up, for everybody out there looking at it, right? Where we could make the utility companies accountable. And in fact, Cece, just in fact, in 2018, the legislature unanimously, Republicans and Democrats, voted to do something about it. However, who is Gavin, one of Gavin Newsom's biggest donors of his whole career?
There we go.
All right.
Ding, ding, and ding, ding, ding.
Ding. It's always about the money, okay?
Well, and it's very interesting because my girlfriend Sherry brought this up literally before the show, that this was tied to money. Why this is all going down, and we also have another thing to talk about. It always is. It always goes back to the money. But Sherry was on point with that, and I thought about that, and here you are bringing it all up. And PG&E. They were the big ones behind the worst natural fire disasters in Northern California. Yes.
I'm waving my finger, which people can't see for a reason. Yes, they were. Yeah. But the reality is, when you look corruption in the dictionary, PG&E gets its own definition. Okay. Remember Aaron Brockovich? I mean, this is, again, the reason I was giving a history lesson before the segment runs out on LAX is we have incredibly short memories. We pay attention to the shiny object presented in front of us in the news, and then we kind of move on as long as the lights go on. We're in danger of the lights not going on. And this is simply one of the things government's basic job, as I say all the time, keep the lights on, the water flowing, electricity, and homeless off the streets, and most importantly, keep me in LA from getting shot. Let me be specific, Newsom. That's me that I'm referring to. So that's the reality of why something like this happens. DWP is a quasi-government agency akin to the mafia and the mob. Okay, they do all kinds of interesting stuff and have their own series of scandals, not quite in the PG&E class, but it's hard to get there. That is the reality of why this happened, how this happened yesterday. We may or may not hear the story unless investigative journalists or your friend Philip Washington dives into it, which he probably won't. RebuildCalifornia.com.
That was a great way to close this out.
Okay?
Awesome. Absolutely. Absolutely. RebuildCalifornia.com. That's where you keep up with Mike, folks. Mike, thank you very much. Anything else you want to get out there before we go to break? You got 30 seconds.
At Netter Mike on Twitter. Look, everybody out there requires everyone getting together, right and left, in the middle, wherever you are. Keep your rights, whether they're for guns, electricity, or water. Follow me at Netter Mike, RebuildCalifornia.com. Listen to TNT, because hell, I've had enough of 80 songs on pop radio. I'm out.
All right. Thanks, Mike. Excellent. Thank you so much. All right, everybody. We're going to go to break here with today's news talk.